Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
Well, good morning. I'm glad you're really here. No one was an hour early. And I wanted to do a talk about turning back the hands of time. I think all of us want to turn back the hands of time and go back to a moment where we wish we had said something at one point or another in our life, or maybe we wish that we hadn't said something at one point in our life or something like that. So if we could just turn back the hands of time like we did last night at 2 a.m., is anybody here really tight that they had to wake up at 2 and turn back their clocks at 2 a.m. Anyway, at 2 a.m., turn back the clocks 1 hour. We would love to do that and turn back the hands of time. We've been doing this since 1918. It was World War I that they came out, and actually Germany started it. They wanted to save coal, so they wanted to keep the light a little bit longer. So it was Germany that started this in 1918 for World War I. Everybody else was saying it was World War II, just because to do the work on your victory guard and things like that, but it was actually World War I in the U.S. in 1919. That was the first year that they've instituted it. But they didn't keep it every single time. There was lots of flack from a lot of different people that didn't want to do it. But it was always a war or an energy crisis that made us go back and turn back the hands of time just a little bit, or turn them forward so that we have more light in the evenings or something like that. And it wasn't just energy and things like that. I know that Clorox actually put millions and millions of dollars out so that we could have daylight savings time. So Clorox owns a company called Kingsford Briquettes, Kingsford Charcoal. So guess what? Even the corporations were, some of the corporations were saying, make it lighter later so that people will grill and buy charcoal. So even Clorox was putting all this money to Congress saying, pass the law, and everything like that. And so there have been arguments all these years of why we do this thing by turning the hands forward, turning the hands backwards. But that it gave me a good opportunity to talk about time. I want you to know that your mind is a very powerful thing. Your mind is a very powerful thing, and time has something to do with that. So just what is time is what I want to talk about, but also too I want to talk about how does mind work in time and how does it adjust to that clockwise, counterclockwise thing. So according to Webster's, time is the measured or measurable period during which an action, process, or condition continues to exist. The measurable period during which an action, process, or condition continues to exist. For those of you that have been here in the past, you know that I stand up here and I talk about cause and effect, everything coming from cause on this side out here into our world of effect over here. I teach that this teaching is expressing love through the law of cause and effect. All is love, all is law. The love aspect is the divine givingness. Health, vitality, abundance, everything is given to us in cause over here. Wisdom, joy, abundance is over here. The infinite number of things that is given to us in cause. But then something needs to happen for it to get over here. There's an infinite givingness of all these things, but something needs to happen over here. A taking needs to occur. I have divine love, but I have to announce the love in my own life. I have to announce that it shows up over here. Just like we start, Paul does it, myself, I do it. Every single Sunday we start off with, such is the nature of life that all it asks and all it wants is the opportunity to appear, and you that are that opportunity. So it's already here, but it needs the opportunity of you to do something to make that show up in here. So it starts with logos, the word. John comes out and says, in the beginning was the word. That's how this all starts and gets going from over here, this kind of nothingness cause that's everything over here to the world of effect. Well, time is only over here in the world of effect. There is no time over here in cause. Time is that process and condition and everything that starts unfolding over here. There is no time over here in cause. So, but we like being over here where time is. So I say I've been in a relationship for 16 years. I tell you that I've been working at the law firm for 16 years. I tell you that I'm 54 years old. So that's all the time that starts here. I look good for 54, right? So we're still working on that. So the other thing that you say is, you know, we've been here 25 minutes already and the minister hasn't even given me anything inspiring to listen to. So we measure that time too. So describing those events, how long they lasted or are lasting in time, but time is only over here in effect. Time's not over here. And just as my 16 years and 54 years and 25 minutes are quote unquote real to me over here in the world of effect, cause is over here just saying love, wisdom, create, abundance, vitality. It's not placing anything on how it's supposed to get up over here. It's just continually showing all those things. So it's logos. How do we get it from here over here? Ernest Holmes, the founder of religious science and what we teach here, says, spirit is timeless, within which is all time. Creation and experience are eternally going on, but any particular experience over here in effect is measured by time and has a beginning and an end. He continues, time is a sequence of events and a unitary wholeness. Time is a sequence of events and a unitary wholeness. It is recollection, attention, anticipation. Recollection is the past. Attention is the present. Anticipation is the future. But all three of those are only experienced in the now moment. The past, we say, happened in the past. But in actuality, it is something that is happening in our very present mind. If you've taken classwork with both Paul and myself, we say this all the time. Life is just a state of consciousness, and what we call the past at any moment is truly a present concept. It is a present moment that we're sitting here and we're recollecting what happened in the past. But it is a now thought about the past. It was Eckhart Tolle that said, time isn't precious at all because it's an illusion. What you perceive as precious is not time, but the one point that is out of time, the now. That is precious. The more you are focused on time, past and future, the more you miss the now, the most precious thing there is. The now is all we have, but we use the now and the power of our mind to go backwards, recollection forward and in our future thinking, using the precious now one way or the other. So today, I want to use the precious now to turn back the hands of time. For any of those times in our life that we have these regrets, I want to go back to a time where you were in a circumstance and for years it has been bugging you, you're regretting it because you wish you could have relived that moment because you wish you had said something or done something, or it could be relived so that you can unsay something or something that you did. So when I went to law school, for one whole day did we spend the whole day on the law of commission and the law of omission. The law of commission is something we had done. And in that instance, it's like committed a burglary. That's the law of commission. I did something. The law of omission is something that we did not do. California passed a law stating that if you're a doctor and you come across an accident, you must stop and take care of those people. And if you don't, we're going to arrest you. That's the law of omission. You didn't do something. So we all have acts of commission and omission that we have in the past that we've done, and maybe we're regretting those things. And this many years later, we sit here in regret, and we wished we should have. But the rest of the world thinks they can't do anything about it. All they think they can do is regret. The rest of the world sits in regret. But here in our teaching, we learn something different. We realize, just like Ernest Holmes said, there is no present nor past, but the ever-present, ever-creative power of now. That's all that we have. It is the now moment that we can go back to any of those acts and clarify the memory into a present concept. What I'm trying to say is that we want to turn back the hands of time over here, just in the world of effect, to go back to a situation and say something that we wish we had said. The trouble comes because we think we can't. I can't go back to 1983 when my mother was on her deathbed and for me to tell her one more time I love her. I think that is the biggest regret most of us have, is that we should have said, I love you, when we didn't. I love Angela sitting here saying, just go up to the child and tell them how much you love them. But the power of this teaching is, I don't need to sit here and regret that I can't turn back the hands of time to 1983. I only need to realize that 1983 is over here in the realm of effect, but it's not over here in cause. In cause, the ever-present now, I can still say, I love you. Now, I know I'm losing some of you here, but I want you to just stay with me a little bit. But where I am saying I love you is not over here in effect, but is over here in cause. We are that unitary wholeness that Ernest Holmes talks about. We're both cause and effect at the same time. We think we only can say I love you here over in the world of effect, but you know what? I can stand in the realm of cause and understand love. So all I need to do is stand in 2014 and say I love you to my mother and know that I have said it on a grander scale than over here. I've stepped up in a level of consciousness and I am saying that. We are so set in our thinking it should have been said in effect, but no, you can say it in cause. And was it being said for the benefit of her, or is it being said for the benefit of me? Who is it being said for? So it was me, and the me is still here, so I can sit there and say that. Unfortunately, we're regretting many things not said, and that power of regret hampers us. We regret way too much, and all the time we are regretting, we are not using the potential that we are, the possibility that each one of us has, in a positive direction. Instead of regretting, we could be using our mind in a different way. The regret happens for those acts of omission, like I wish I said I love you, I wish I said I'm sorry, those things that we didn't say. Maybe something we said to a parent many years ago. Maybe something we said to a child this morning. Again, the regret is a present moment about a past experience. So why don't we change the present moment thinking away from one of regret to one of possibility? The possibility to say I love you, whether they are on this plane of existence or not. So I challenge all of you to do this on this day. On this day that we're turning back the hands of time to understand really that there really is no time, that we actually exist in this greater understanding of what it is that we need to say. So say those things that you wish you had said and take back those things that you wish it you had said, because the only real place it is happening is in consciousness, is all. Both the universal and the individual, they are both the one. And it was Thich Nhat Hanh that said it so perfectly. When you touch one moment with deep awareness, you touch all moments. If you live one moment deeply, that moment contains all the past and all the future in it. The one contains the all. Touching the present moment does not mean getting rid of the past or the future. As you touch the present moment, you realize that the present is made of the past and is creating the future. He continues, touching the present, you touch the past and the future at the same time. You touch globally the infinity of time, the ultimate dimension of reality. When you drink a cup of tea very deeply, you touch the present moment and you touch the whole of time. When you do it very deeply, you touch the present moment and you touch the whole of time. This is what we teach here. In the present moment, in the power of mind, we can say, I love you, I'm sorry, thank you, I forgive you. We can also say, I take back what I said, and in its place say, I love you. So we need to let go of regret. Let go of regret of the things we've said, the things we've done. Let go of the regret of a broken marriage. Let go of the regret of an abortion. Let go of the regret of a painful relationship. Move beyond all of this regretting and go into faith. Old things passed away. Behold, I make all things new. And it's not Jesus that does this. It's your mind that does this. Your mind makes all things new. And that moves me to the second point I wanted to make about time, how mind works with time. Again, your mind is a very powerful thing. And I want to share with you a few stories of how your mind and your body are connected. And the reason I wanted to pull this into my talk today is there's a psychologist that's done many stories called Counterclockwise, Turning Back the Hands of Time. And I read a story about this last week. It was in the New York Times Magazine about turning back the hands of time. And the psychologist is Ellen Langer. She's a professor at Harvard. She's been there over 30 years. And in 1981, she did a marvelous study. She did a scientific experiment on 8 men in their 70s. And what she did is the 8 men stepped out of a van in front of a converted monastery. They shuffled forward, a few arthritically stooped, some with canes walking. And when they stepped through the door of the monastery, they stepped into a time warp. Perry Como crooned on the radio. Ed Sullivan was on the black and white TV set. Everything inside, the books on the shelves, the magazines on the table, were all designed to conjure up 1959. So this is 1981. They're throwing them back in a time capsule back into 1959. Everything was set 22 years earlier when the men were in their 50s. Ellen Langer says this was before the 75 was the new 55. This was before your grandmother looked like a grandmother, and they don't look like grandmothers anymore. Who's a grandmother here? Lots of grandmothers. Do you look like a grandmother? Not at all, right? My grandmother had horn-rimmed glasses. And before arriving, the men were assessed on many levels: dexterity, grip strength, flexibility, hearing, vision, memory, cognition. Dr. Langer predicted that with just 5 days of immersion into 1959, they would change. Their physicality would change. Dr. Langer did other experiments with the elderly before they did this test. So she had a nursing home that she had before that, and she had two groups of patients. She had one group of patients that she all gave plants to and gave them some directions, and she gave another group some plants and gave them some direction. And I know you know where this is all going. We've always talked about the plants that were talked to. They grew more and everything like that. Well, I don't want to talk about the plant consciousness today. I want to talk about the people's consciousness about the plants. The first group, they said, these are your plants. You're responsible for them. You have to do this with these plants. You've got to take care of them. You've got to set up a schedule. You've got to make sure you take care of the plants. The other group, she said, these are your plants. The staff will take care of them. 18 months later, more of these people were still alive than those people. Mainly because they had to do something with their mind. Mainly they had to do something. So, Langer back then in the 70s was telling the medical community that they were on the wrong track in thinking the mind and body were not connected. So, you know, this got really big. This is when science of mind was really big, was back in the 70s. You know, religious science church was the then thing. And ever since then, the 80s and 90s with Oprah and everything like that, Wayne Dyer, we all know now that the mind and body is connected. But back in the 70s, that's not what the medical community was saying. The belief back then was that the only way to get sick was the introduction of a pathogen, and the only way to get well was to get rid of it. That's the only way. What Langer believed was that what people needed was a psychological prime, something that triggered the body to take curative measures all by itself. So the old men were gathered for this premise. What do we need to do to trigger their mind to start thinking better? They were not just to reminisce about the good old days, but to inhabit it, to take a psychological attempt to be the person that they were 22 years earlier. From the time they walked through the door, they were treated as if they were younger. Even the one with the cane and that could barely walk, they said, you know what? You've got to bring all your things up the stairs to your room. Even if you have to carry one shirt at a time, you are the one carrying one shirt at a time up there. They discussed sports and Johnny Unitas and Wilt Chamberlain. They discussed current events like the first American satellite launched. They dissected the movie Anatomy of a Murder with Jimmy Stewart. They had to speak in present terms of these things, like, did you see Johnny Unitas? Did you see Wilt Chamberlain? In this controlled environment, there were no mirrors. They could not see what they looked like. They had no modern-day clothing. They had no present pictures around. The pictures that they had around were from 1959 of themselves. That's what they had. Nothing to spoil the idea that they were 22 years younger. No different medicine was given, just a lifestyle change. Just their thinking that they were in 1959. Just their thinking that they were 22 years younger. At the end of the story, only 5 days, they were tested again. They were suppler. They showed greater manual dexterity. They sat taller. And when the van came and started pulling them, to take them away, they kind of played a little bit of touch football before they jumped into the van. Langer said one thing she didn't expect. Their eyesight was better just in 5 days, just thinking that they were younger. So Langer didn't write about this because back in the 70s, that's not what the medical community thought. Those two things are not connected. There's even recently in 2010 been a movie done in London called The Young Ones where they did the same thing, but it was reality TV. They didn't do the scientific studies of measuring everything. They just did reality TV. But they also said with that TV series that Langer was said to be the one that gets this and understands it's only mind having to do with that, this counterclockwise things. She's the one that said health and illness are much more rooted in our minds and our hearts and how we experience ourselves in the world than our models even begin to understand. Dr. Langer started her observation in the 70s that people were just not there, quote unquote. People are just not there. Not cognitive of the present moment. Buddhists for thousands of years have called this sleeping. We're sleeping. We're just sleeping. Mystics through the ages have said, wake up. Wake up. Langley said, when you're not there, you're very likely to go where you are led. Not where you are leading, but where you are led. In religious science, we call this race consciousness. If we are not there, we're just going to go where the rest of society thinks we should be going, and we get on the bus with them and we go with them. She said we need to be more mindful about the choices put before us. Just like on Tuesday, we have many choices put before us in this election and everything like that. Now, if we go with race consciousness, we're going to have the biggest mud pile because there's been so much mudslinging over the last few months. And that's if we just go with race consciousness. But be mindful. Fulfill your potential. And this will improve your health. Langer speaks of the placebo effect. What does the placebo effect have on your mind? She also said there's a nocebo effect. Not even the placebo, but a no. Both are just the power of mind. And the placebo effect, and somebody pointed out, and actually just saw this speaker a couple weeks ago, said that there were 84 maids that they did a study on. And they did two groups of the 84 maids. And all 84 of them were complaining they didn't have time to go to the gym, they didn't have time to work out, they didn't have time to work on their physical body. And so therefore they were out of shape and they just weren't so healthy. So what she did is she took half of those women and said, you know what? Your job is your physical workout. Do you know everything that you do between making the beds and vacuuming and running up and down the stairs and doing all that is a workout? That was half the group. The other half, she didn't say anything. At the end of the study, the group that was only told that it was a workout had lost weight. The other group hadn't. It was only in mind. It's that mind-body connection. A psychological psychological change made a physical change in the body. Mind-body connection. We have it there all the time. Now, the biggest study for the doctor is coming up this spring, and we get to watch it unfold. Dr. Langer is conducting the same counterclockwise experiment with women in stage 4 breast cancer. Stage 4. This is not just slight cancer. Level 4 is when the medical community has pretty much given up. They're not going to do anything. There's going to be 24 women in this group, and she's going to have three groups. One group is going to be just like the men, placed in the time capsule back to 2003. They're just taking 11 years ago. All 24 of them in that year were healthy and hopeful, and they had no mortal threat hanging over their heads. Two groups are going to stay in a resort. One group is going to be immersed in 2003. Another is going to be in a resort, but they're not going to be immersed in 2003. They're just going to be around other cancer people and cancer survivors. The third group is not going to have anything. They're just going to have their regular day-to-day thing that they're doing for this. Group one, inhabit your former self. Go back to 2003. It's 2003. They already have this set up in Mexico where they're going. They've got the Big Lebowski DVD already in there. They've got the Titanic DVDs going to be around. Pictures of their healthy self are going to be there. There's no mirrors. Group two at another resort will have the mirrors. All three groups to be tested with the size of tumors, blood work showing the amount of cancer cells that are there circulating through their body. The first group will be encouraged to think anew about their circumstances, to purge any negative messages they have absorbed during their passage through the medical system. This is very crucial, because if they pass through the medical system, are they getting a positive effect or a negative effect? It depends. Where the negative ideas in mind produce a negative results in the body, that's the nocebo effect. We have a lot of nocebo effects. The very first time someone's diagnosed with breast cancer, the nocebo effect starts right away. And the nocebo effect has everything to do with us and nothing to do with the people. So if I get diagnosed with breast cancer, it's just like I taught you 2 weeks ago, that you open up your file that you have in your subconscious mind about breast cancer. You open up that file and you throw it on yourself. Everything that you've heard about breast cancer, you throw it on yourself, and then you start having to live your life with that all over you. The worst part is when one of your very best friends shows up to you and says they've been diagnosed with breast cancer. You know what we do? We open up our file of breast cancer and throw it on them. We put everything that we have in breast cancer on them. So what is it that we have to do to get that to change? If you change a word here and there, you're going to change the world of effect. We need to change that file. There was a study saying women were in remission were sicker than the women that were told they were cured. Same health, but one was told in remission, one was told cured. Other things for nocebo are victims, chronic, and fighting. All of these are nocebo effect words. Langer is telling people to decide to get well. Just like the book, decide to get well. We're going to be doing that Power of Decision class next year. And one of those things is decide to be healthy. If you don't, the race consciousness is going to lead otherwise. So what is race consciousness about health? It's not healthy. It's not healthy. Langer was getting approval for this study that's going to happen next spring. She finally got it from Mexico. Harvard also allowed her to do the study. But the physician at University of Southern California, who's getting all the 24 patients together, the University of Southern California is not giving their approval just yet. USC wanted a waiver sign saying the study has no known benefits. And Dr. Langer said, we're not going to use USC because that's the nocebo effect. By telling the people up front there's no known effects, you've just said the nocebo effect is in place. So now they've gone to the University of Texas and it has to still clear the ethics board there. So get this. Does the cancer hospital community want a mind cure for cancer? Not at all. Not at all. This reminds me of religion. Has religion through the ages wanted people to hear the good news about themselves? Not at all. Keep them fearful. Keep them fearful. Same in the medical profession. Keep them fearful. Now, I'm not saying not to go to a doctor, but I want you to go with a doctor woken up, with your consciousness of understanding where your health comes is not here, but over here. That's where you need to go to the doctors with that understanding. Don't give up your mind to be led. Do the leading in whatever it is that comes up for you. Group one of these women are going to have cooking classes, art classes, writing classes, all to take their mind off this brute dread of their circumstances and re-engage them in life. Because if you get a diagnosis of level 4 breast cancer, you're not going to be re-engaged in life. So it's teaching them to be engaged in life. The terror of late stage cancer is just as debilitating as the physical disease is. So it's just the thought about it. So we're going to be able to see this unfold before our very eyes next spring. Some psychologists are saying she's setting herself up for failure. Others say positive thinking is not enough. You know, when I was in the hospital with breast cancer, they sent in the Sunshine Brigade, and I didn't get better. I didn't get better. So Langer says it's not the patient to blame, but the culture. The culture wants to blame. Everybody wants to blame why this is happening, what's happening. So she's bringing us to the point where blame will not be the first thing people will reach for when things go awry. Instead, we will simply bring to bear the power of our own minds, which Langer believes will turn out to be more powerful than we imagine. And that is what we teach here. Your mind is a powerful thing. Today, as we are able to turn back the hands of time for anything in the past we regret, we realize it is the mind that is doing the work over here in cause than anything that we need to say in effect. We're very powerful and we understand that. And secondly, when we go counterclockwise, we remember the healthiest time we ever were. I remember the healthiest time I ever was. The best time that I was big and buff and burly and everything. And there's 1 to 2 people in here that have almost seen me at that time. That's how long that I've been around this teaching and some other people. But when I conjure up in my mind the healthiest that I ever was, it was at the end of boot camp coming out of Army. I was, the Army knew how to buff you up and beef you up and be tough and everything. So whenever I want to go back and conjure up this image of the healthiest I've ever been, I go back to the end of boot camp and I remember just how big I was and how strong I was. That's the most healthiest I ever thought I was. But go back to any time that you were, the richest time you ever were, the time you felt the most loved, the time we felt we were at the top of our careers, and do that. And I don't mean to do that in positive thinking. I really mean immerse yourself. Think deeply on those things. Go there. Thich Nhat Hanh was correct. Touching the present, you touch the past and the future at the same time. You touch globally the infinity of time. When you drink a cup of tea very deeply, you touch the present moment and the whole of time. And when you touch the whole of time, here and here, it is wonderful. And so are you, and so it is. Great. Let's take 5 minutes' time to do a treatment and understand there is no time where we're going. We're going to a place where there is no time, there is no space. It's the nothingness and the allness of spirit. It is the wholeness of the universe, which is also the wholeness of each one of us. It is the love of the universe that is also the love of each one of us. It's the vitality, the abundance, the creativity. All of that in the realm of cause is right here where I stand, where you sit. This is cause and effect in one. It is the divinity and the humanity coming together as one. It is on this day that we can turn back the hands of time and not allow ourselves to regret anything that has happened in the past of what we said, not said, done, or not done. What we do is we stand in the realm of infinite cause and say, I choose to love right now. It is in this present moment that I bring back that old idea and change it to one of love. We do that. We easily do that. We can stand here and do that in mind, for it is all consciousness, and that's what we are. We love more greatly from this point forward because we are going very deep into the present moment. And in this present moment, we touch eternity, both forward and backward. In this moment, we recognize the health of God as our health, the vitality of God as our vitality, the abundance of the universe as our abundance, the creativity of the universe as our creativity. We stand in that powerful moment. We've been given hints along the way in our past about the love that we felt the most at one time in our life or how healthy we felt. Those are just hints on how this could unfold. Now we understand the spiritual law of how it shows up in our lives. It goes from cause to effect through logos, through our word. Whether we think it works or doesn't work, we are correct. So we think that it works. We know that it works. We come to a teaching that teaches us that these spiritual laws work well in our lives. So we raise our mindset above the law of averages and where the rest of the world is leading, and we step above that, step into the law of cause and effect, and understand something greater. We are unique individuals in the mind of God, expressing uniquely this life through each one of us. So we choose the greater ideas. We wake up. We live our life greatly. We give great thanks for this understanding. And when we walk out of these doors in 5 minutes, we will know this truth about ourselves. We will be changed. We will understand that, yes, there's all of this time out here in the world of effect, but in actuality, we are timeless individuals living life. We choose that idea, and together we say, and so it is.